accession number 11038, reel 3.
Mr. Bill Towers, reel 3. We were talking about when you moved into the Fleurbaer area near Armentières, and I wondered if you could take us through that initial thing from what you did when you arrived. I know you described the gun pits, but if you could just to keep it in continuity, what happened when you first got into your gun positions?
When we got in, we put the gun pits, we made the gun pits, and we'd been working on it, and we completed them, and then the officer gave them the afternoon off. But the older people went down in the dugouts, and writing letters or sleeping. And I and another young lad, younger than me, we'd seen this road at the side, and infantry went down, and there was canvas across, so nobody could see them coming.
You mean canvas at the side, or canvas
posts up and canvas right across the road to stop the view of from afar. If they're up in the tree or anything, they couldn't see on the road.
So it was above them?
Yes. Anyway, we set off and walked down this road. We thought we'd go see it for Germans. We didn't know the danger then. Anyway, we came to a field with some trees in. This lad says, "Ooh, can we climb one of them trees?" So we went and we looked round for a suitable, and somebody ground horseshoes, you know, the edges there at the front, and braided them in, and they were like steps. So we climbed up, went right up into this poplar tree, and there was a plank there up there, we could sit there. And it evidently was an observation post. And there we were watching Germans down there, working, with like bird's eye view. Never seen Germans. I thought it was marvellous watching these.
You could actually see into the German lines?
Lines, yeah. And all of a sudden there's shouting going. Somebody in there at the gun pits had missed us. Somebody said, "We saw him going down that road," and they sent a search party out for us. Anyway, they shouted to us, "Come down there," the officer there. He said, "What are you doing up there?" He said, "We're just looking for Germans." We're innocent. Right, under arrest. And that night we were sent back to wagon lines because we were a danger to the troops. So we went down to gun, we finished his work there. Some of us had to go down, so we had to go down. We were on the, we wasn't blacklisted actually. We were sent down to carry on with duties there for a while. And then we automatically went back into gun teams.
I want to look what it was like when you were living in the gun pits now. What you mentioned the dugouts. What were the dugouts like?
Well, it was just an old dugout and a boat. Two of you could lay there and two or three in another one, other side.
And how deep would they be?
Oh, about 3 foot deep. You just jump down and lay on it, you see, and on these boards.
There was no protection other than boards?
Oh, well, they were built over, you see.
With sandbags?
Oh, sandbags were built over, and we got tree logs and laid them across, you know, and cut tree branches on, all like that, covered it all in at top, best way we could. So the only aperture was where we went in, and the square hole where the gun fired through, you could turn it like that.
No, but I meant the actual dugouts.
The dugout, just the hole with the planks across.
That's right. So
that's all.
You didn't have any extra protection on them?
No, well, that was inside the dugout, you see. It was all built round. That was part of the gun pit.
Oh, I see.
The gun pit. The gun was here, and we went down all here. But the sandbags were built round, so we were under protection from shrapnel.
Your dugouts were inside the gun
pit? Inside the gun pit. That was all part of the gun pit. And through the other side was ammunition building, bins, they like, what they call pigeonholes for shells and that. But underneath, they made this little dugout for some fuel there. And then NCOs had their own dugout somewhere else, you see. That was only for the gunners then.
What was it like in these dugouts?
Well, it was rest for us, that's all we know. We could rest, that's all. Don't even nothing. You had to leave it open so he could breathe. That's it.
Now, what food did you get brought up while you were in your gun?
Well, it was brought up in so much stuff brought up, and the cook went behind some wall, or if there was a wall at back away from us, and could light a little fire, a trench fire, and they cooked stew. It was nearly all stew, beef, corned beef and all like that, and he supplied it, and tea. Then we were detailed off to go fetch Dixies back to our place, and they dished it out to us then. Then we sat where we could, back at Gumpit, somewhere, if it were on field.
And when would you get this hot meal? Which meal of the day would it be?
Oh, well, it depends on what you're doing. If you were firing, you couldn't have your meal.
But if you weren't?
I weren't, about 6 out of a meal. We knew we had breakfast, dinner and tea.
What would breakfast be?
Oh, God, a bit of biscuit or something like that. Sometimes you just had hard biscuits. They said they were meat in them. I eat a lot because I've good teeth, but the poor fellas that couldn't, they couldn't manage. I also used to carry some. You could always get an abundance. And you could always get an abundance of cheese. They always come up with old cheese, you know, Canadian red cheddar. And you could go cut a lump off. And they had what they call tickler's jam. You could get plenty of that. You'd open a tin of that and spread it on the cheese and eat it. No bread. So you eat that.
And what was the quality like of these three things? What were the biscuits like, in your view?
Well, they must have been good. But the big, hard things like that. And I tell you, I had good, very good teeth. I could break them and chew them.
Did they taste all right?
Well, they tasted like just plain biscuits, you know. But they were something to eat. You enjoyed them because you had no bread. Then they became the baked bread in France then for us, round loaves, and they come up sometimes. And they said, there's a loaf there, you. And of course they cut it into slices, and somebody got a big slice, somebody got a little slice.
And what about the cheese? Was that all right? The
cheese? Well, you could get a tumble of cheese if you wanted it. There was an old cheese there, go cut the lump off.
Was it all right though?
Oh yes, it was good. Canadian cheddar. But we eat a lot.
And what about the tickler's jam? What was that like?
That was it, in a tin. Oh, it was, I think, more turnips flavoured, you know, boiled and flavoured. Tickler's jam, it was well known in First War.
And you didn't think much of it?
Oh, we eat a lot of it.
Did you like it?
Yes, we had to like it. We got fed up with it, but still had to eat it.
Was there any particular flavours they had?
Yes, there was all different flavours. And there was corned beef in abundance. Sometimes there'd be no meat sent up, and there'd be a case of Fraybenters corned beef, that is today, the identical, when in 1914 they come, you could always get a tin of corned beef and open it. But the trouble was, they hadn't keys on all of them, like, and you need a jackknife, you need to bust it and try and tear. It was in shreds when you got it.
Judging by the number of accidents people have with corned beef tins now, was that a bit risky?
It was risky, because you had a jackknife. You had to stab it and arrive it, you know, and do like that. If you'd lost a key, a little key, and there were different keys in them there.
Would people cut themselves doing that?
Yes, so I. But we got used to it, didn't bother.
What was the quality of the Fraybenters like?
Very, just the same as it is today. But the only snag is you got that much of it till you... I said, oh, God, we used to say, and we touch this stuff again. And now we're eating it again and enjoying it.
Anything else, any other rations you got up, any food?
No, I think that was about all. It was the same old ration every time, you know, cheese.
Did you get sick of it then?
You got fed up to teeth, but you were hungry.
What about water?
Water? Well,
or tea?
Water. Well, tea, they made it in the Dixie. And every so long, we had an RAMC man and a doctor. And his instruction was, drop some number 9 pills in the tea. And he knew, he had for a toilet, it was a trench dug and a board, a crossboards like that, either end, and a pole, tree trunk. And to sit over that, and there's a rate for that after breakfast, that put all this number 9 physic in the tea. God, it was terrible. To make it ever clear out.
Did you feel embarrassed?
No, you got used to it. It didn't bother you. They're all alike.
Did they provide any paper or anything to use?
No, you had to get a newspaper or you could grass or anything.
So it was up to you?
Oh yes, up to you. And if you had any paper, you kept it, saved it. And over that morning, when you knew when number nines had been put in, because you were always...
They wouldn't tell you, but you knew the
result. Oh no, they wouldn't tell you. Oh no, you wouldn't drink tea to tell them. That's it. And then the water was, horrid. We had a tanker, metal, it was like a tank like that on wheels, with a lid on and a round hole at the top. And used to have two pair of mules driving it, pulling it. And it used to go down to the river. And if we'd gone down to a river, if it was, this was the wagon lines, they'd come pump water out. And you'd be here bathing in there, and some perhaps higher up would be bathing, but he's supposed to get to the top to get it, pump it out. And it's so many measures of chloride and lime. He put that in and then filled it up with water. And as it's going up road, it's shaking it up, you know. And if you wanted to drink, it went with your mess tin, drunk that chloride of lime in it.
What did it taste like?
Oh, God, it tasted horrid. But you had to drink it. That's it. If you wanted to drink, you had to drink it.
Did it spoil your tea as well?
You were glad to get anything. It was rotten. You wouldn't have drunk it in peace. You had to drink it. I'd get to do without. So it was forced onto you. There was nothing else, no alternative.
They made the tea with the same water. Could you still taste the chloride
over
time in the tea?
Yes, taste that. Yes, the tea was rotten.
So it spoilt the taste of
yes,
your tea?
Yes, yes.
Was it better though as tea than as as plain water?
Oh, I do. Yes, it had a bit more flavour in it. It killed a lot of it in taste.
Did you get enough water?
No. And I tell you what, we had to shave every morning, and there was perhaps no water, so you had to save a drop of your tea to lather with. Don't drink all your tea. Save a drop to make you lather with, to shave, because you had to shave.
That was enforced, was it?
Yes, yes. I once went on and prayed. He says, "You haven't shaved this morning." I said, "I've never shaved, sir." "Well, start then." And I had a cutthroat razor and had to start and try to shave. He says, "And shave before you come on parade next time." Again, that was my first experience. And you had to use a drop of your tea you were left to lather with.
Did you have
you
hadn't shaved before? Cutthroat razors aren't easy, did you?
No, that didn't do bad. I used them for a long time after that. But you had to do it. That was it. You said, do it before you come on parade tomorrow.
Were you expected to keep clean as well?
Yes. But the irony was you hadn't a change of clothing. If you got wet through, you kept on until they were dry. If you were soaked through to the skin... Now you could take them off and you put fresh on. You couldn't there. You'd keep them on till they dried. And they say it causes rheumatics, but it doesn't. I've never had rheumatics.
Do you have any problem with all this lack of able to change your clothes and such like? Did you have any problem with lice?
With lice? Oh, yes. Oh, God.
Where did this start?
I don't know, but they encouraged it, I think. I had a blanket and I wrote home to my mother when she was sending a parcel, will you put me a tin of Solvol in? That was a black paste. And when you put so much in water, it went like milk, disinfectant. And I put it in a bucket like in water and sprinkled my blanket in good weather all over and laid it out to dry. I got rid of it. Then, what they did, I come round one morning, blanket parade. Come four men all over a blanket, they come round and you have to throw your blanket in, like that with that. So they mixed all the blankets up, and every 10 they rolled up into a roll and tied them with string. And then we had a wagon with a boiler on, used to come up, and they took them and put them in like an engine boiler, open friend, and they put all these bundles in, tied up, like that, and piled them in tight. Closed the door, put steam on, brought the pressure up for so long, and that. But it never got into the middle. If there were eggs, it hatched them. So you got... And they come back and give you a blanket. You've got somebody else's blanket. So you couldn't keep it free. I tried to keep it free. The first thing I had to do then was sprinkle this Solvol all over it to try and kill them. And you got them in the seams of your trousers. And if we could, if we're on one of you, take your trousers off, riding breeches, they were terrible. And they'd light a candle. And they'd go down the seam and it'd go crack, 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 crack. All down the seam, killing them like that. Oh, terrible.
Did you, that's quite, because you've got to not set fire to the thread.
No, you just do it enough so it didn't burn the cloth. And they'd seem to crack them things.
And you got the hang of that, did
yes,
you?
Yes, we got the hang of that. That's one way we got rid of a lot of them.
Did you ever get rid of them, though?
No, never. You could never. Not till I came home.
What was so annoying about them? I mean, I know that's a silly
they
question.
They crawled about you, and their itch made you itch, and that, and that's it. And all round your privates and that, and you were terrible, you know.
Is that where they gathered most?
They crawled, and there was another thing called crabs. And that's, you got them, you got, sit on a pole. You hadn't seen, you come aware of the crab. And these things were little things, and the legs went right into your skin. And you could see this little rat thing, you had to scrape it out. Oh, and it was terrible, it was sucking blood and that. They're stuck all over you, down lower parts.
And did you have anything to sort of...
They never give you anything for it. But I had Solvol, this Solvol, it was a good thing. I used to go out and make a bucket full of it and bathe myself with it all over.
Oh, how long would that work for, or would it work
oh,
at all?
Oh, it worked for 24 hours, I should think. And then it found them coming back again. But if you run out of Solvol, you couldn't buy any there. To wait to come from home. But it was a godsend for me, I had it. I didn't know anybody else had it, but I had it.
Did they cause any other? I mean, was there any skin diseases?
I don't think so. I never heard of anything
like
that.
No scabies or anything like that?
No, I think there were scabies a bit, but that was more with your diet, not eating certain things, I think. But I've never heard of anybody getting any complaint with them. So I never was sick once all the time I was in the army.
So it was mainly the itching feeling?
Yes, aye. And you knew they're there. And sometimes they'd be creeping up in and you go,
oh,
like that.
Your neck?
Yes, aye. Coming out for fresh air, something like that. Oh, God, terrible. And I've seen lads having races with them.
Can you tell me about that?
And put them on the table, like that, and a little line, only a shot, and betting on who's got to the line first. And if it turned away, just knocked it with some. Could see them having a race.
Wouldn't they hop away? Or
no, they were fleas. These were just crawly things. They couldn't fly at all like that. They just creeped. Little round oval things.
What about actual fleas? You know, the hopping
oh,
ones?
Oh, fleas, we didn't get them, thank God.
So that was separate? These were not...
These were lice. Hmm. And they have them read now in schools here. I didn't know that. That shook me a few years ago. I thought, my God, that's terrible. We never meant civilian life. We couldn't, no. Anyway, I never got rid of them until I come home.
Now, in your gun pits and such, did you have any problem with the food being around, with rats or such or like? Were they? Did you see any?
Ooh, rats. God, love me. They were like cats. I've never seen such big rats. And the trouble was when you're on guard, and if it were near trees where the leaves had dropped, you'd be saying, oh, go, goes there. And all of a sudden, quiet. You talk to somebody creeping about, and it were rats. We found out it were rats in among leaves. And that, oh, God, I... And I once going on a road, this is breaking up from where I once going on a road, walking up a road, well, wasn't in Gumpit. And there's a lad, a soldier coming down with a dog, we thought, on a lead. When we got to him, he had a rat with a string round its waist, and it was up, and come back, and he'd taken it for a walk, doing all sorts of daft tricks like that.
Did they frighten you?
Well, I don't think they did, because when you're on the move, if there's a barn, they put you in there for billets. Went in one barn one night. It was a big room, big barn, wooden floor. But there's holes all over the damn floor. And at night, you'd wake up, and hear a bump. And it was a rat creeping over you. And you'd frighten it, jump off. And, yeah, we all got heard of it. So... There was all right bang in the middle of the floor, so we got a piece of thick string made a loop, one knot, and one lad had it here, another lad had it at this side, and when this rat coming up, when it got halfway up, they put string and threw it out, catching rats, and they were, God, there was someone that size, you know, tremendous rat.
Would you kill them when you caught them?
Yes, aye. Why? And another experience I had was a dog, as I told you, they followed you. Had a little lovely little dog come and attach itself to me. And it used to sleep at my foot.
And when did you get this?
I don't know when it was that. It's a lovely little
later
dog.
In the war, though?
Yes.
Carry on, though.
She laid on my feet on the night, I thought, it was lovely. And I got up, she went, come up with me, went all over with me. And then one day I had to go out somewhere, right, for a message somewhere. And when I come back, she'd had a pup. And God, and all lads, they all idolised this pup. I thought, oh, if I go and leave, that pup's going home with me. But unfortunately, when I went out one day, I come back, pup had gone, and one of the fellas had gone on leave, he'd taken it home with him.
And what did you call the dog, the one that had...
I don't know what we called that. It just...
Did it stay with you?
Oh, yes. It stayed with us for a long time, then all of a sudden it vanished. Don't know what happened to it.
Was it sort of important to you? Did it give you a bit of...
Oh, yes, I enjoyed it. He enjoyed anything like that. Like, he enjoyed having a horse. He always made a fuss of a horse. He had very little money. But if you're out at line, you're going anywhere, and you could go to a shop, you go buy a bar of chocolate, perhaps a pint of two, so 10 cents, something like that, just a little bar. And I'd go, you shout, Gladys, and she'd put her head up and whinny, and you'd go and take her a bar of chocolate, and then go turn in. He did it, and he had very little money, but he'd always buy some for your horse.
Getting back to, you know, we're talking about what it was like.
Yeah.
Did you get a rum ration at all?
Oh, yes, occasionally. When things were getting a bit sticky and it were real cold, you got a rum ration, and I was a fool, I'd give it away. I was young, I didn't drink.
You were a teetotal, were you?
I was teetotal, and for a while, and then I thought, what a mug am, it's cold weather, I'll drink it, and it was lovely.
You enjoyed it then?
Yes, it warmed you up. I wouldn't say I enjoyed it, but it warmed you up.
How did they dole it out, do you remember?
Yes, just he had a jar. These Yellowstone jar bottles, have you seen them? He used to have one of them, 1 gallon. And he used to come round, only Western back. That's all. And sometimes he had a little porcelain pot, and team so much in that and give you two of them at quarter
mile. A measure?
Yes, they used that as a measure, but they didn't know how far up they were, you know. They just shook it in, that's all. If they liked you, you got more, I think.
As a teetotaler, the first time you tried it, did it affect you at all? I mean, besides making you feel a bit
yeah,
warm,
well, no,
a bit
drunk, I a bit dizzy, eh?
But did you get used to it?
I got used to it. And then believe it was in 1916, after Somme, we're down at Wagon Lines, and it were all over. And one of our chaps, his brother was in West Yorks, which was our infantry mob. His brother came down to see him, because he'd lost one brother. And we're all in a bivouac, about six of us. And we bought some baby barley wines you could get. We all clubbed up, put a bit of money together and got so many. And Corporal out at store came and we sat down with a little deck of gramophone celebrating, having a sing-song and in this beer round. Didn't know that the quartermaster still brought a jar of rum. He kept, when they put in a bottle, and he took some of that in. When we come to get up, we couldn't stand. And I got up next morning, covered in mud, dried. I don't know what's happened to me. So I said to one of the chaps, hey, what's happened to me? He says, you're dumb, so-and-so. He says, you and Mac went dancing in mud, and you fell. We're doing the waltz in mud, and we fell. So we put you in wagon, because we woke up in a wagon, all this clay stuck to his mud, and you couldn't take them off. You had to get a brush, horsebrush, and brush it all up this way you could.
Was that the first time you got drunk?
Yes, it was. A long time before I got drunk again. I think I just didn't like it a bit.
Did it make you feel ill?
No, I didn't just particularly feel I was annoyed because I hadn't thick of mud and having to try and get cleaned up before I went on parade.
What about cigarettes?
I never smoked. I used to get my cigarettes rash and give it away.
You wouldn't exchange it, you'd give it?
No,
you?
Give it, I'd give it away, yes. Because they're not to exchange for it, really. Nothing. And it was one of the officers. It was they had a wholesale cigarette place in Leeds, and he had these woodbines sent out every so long. He came round and gave us all a packet of woodbines apiece. Well, I gave them to my pal, one of pals working with her. Anybody, I didn't particularly give any particular person, but I never had. But you could always get a tin of pipe tobacco. The only thing we used them for was if we could go and have a game at football. We used to play with them till it burst and all tobacco flew all over the show. We had those nice moments, as well as the rough.
What were your actual duties like? We might as well start at Flow Bay near Armentiers. What were you doing? You were with the 15-pounders.
Yes.
What would a typical day be like?
Well, it varied according to the action you took. So if you run at the fire ammunition off, you had to go fetch some more ammunition. You had to go perhaps a long way off, wherever you could go to ammunition dump and carry it.
Would the ammunition dump be with the wagon lines, or was that somewhere?
No, it wasn't the wagon lines, somewhere near to gun pits, you see, away from guns. Pardon me. And we had what we call a saddle thing. A big thing that went round your neck, and it had two leather handles and pockets in. You could put shells in, and then you carry them. But don't make for 6 foot odd men. We wasn't that, so your neck wasn't carrying anything. It was carrying it all in your arms, and perhaps 3 or 4 shells, because they weighed a bit. And it wasn't on carpeted floor, it was rough land, and God, it was hard work, especially if you're short. Because everything in the army in those days was made for 6 footers.
But most people weren't 6 foot then.
No,
were they?
No.
People were shorter than they are now.
You see, they had to be a certain height before you take you in the army. But now, anybody goes in. After during war, anybody went in. But they didn't think to alter these things. If you got a tunic to fit you.
So that was one job, fetching ammunition.
Yes.
Now, what about when you were actually in action? What would happen?
Well, we'd be getting the shell. Told you about the shell, the key.
Now, the shells were on the left, were they?
Yes, on the left, in a gun limber back to in there, with all these shells in. And then we'd made places with shells. There were different types of shells, but there was 15 pounds of all the same shell. And you used to screw this cap, there's a plug there, key, put it, a shell there on it and turn it. This cap came out, you got a fuse out of a pigeonhole, screwed that in, there was a key hung up, got it, tightened it up.
Now in action, who'd tell you which shell, which fuse to
the officer give you their range.
What was the sequence of commands, do you remember?
Yes, gun layer, aiming post, something, if it was barren land, we stood a post out, and a steel post out about 10 yards out with a lamp on, and it hadn't a full face, it had a face with just a slot in. It was lit up and you could see that. That was your aiming post. It give you aiming post on the side in front, and then 5 degrees left or 5 degrees right, and that you set that.
And that was the sort of layer?
That for the layer, and then it give him the range. And then he'd give him, it turned, that was a drum here, a collaborated drum. And he'd turn the handle till it come to that thing. And then go up a bit past, and then it press it. Because always go back, take the slack of the thread up. Because dropping that knocked a few yards.
And what would you be doing while the officer was giving these commands to the
lad? They'd give us a corrector bar. There's a corrector bar. It's a 3-foot steel brass rule with a sliding centre. And they give you range, correction, something, I forget what. They brought this out, and that give you the fuse setting for it. And
so this is the first thing you do?
Yeah, it was the fuse. You got the shell, you put the fuse in,